the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
All right, welcome to a special edition of Metal Tales from the Road. I'm talking with Tyler Harder here. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you taking the time. What's interesting about Tyler and what I'm really looking forward to talking to him about is Tyler has been to not one but two of the coveted Hardwired experiences where you get to meet the boys, including Mr. Jimmy James Hetfield Sr. And so you just did the Hardwired experience for the second time at the Saskatoon show this week, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So we're going to talk all about what that's like, you know, what the queue is like to line up to get there. I mean, we're going to do all the details of it, if you don't mind, just because there are people like me who likely will never do one of these. So, but first of all, so let's sort of figure out, like, what's your deal with the band? When did you come online? What was the first thing you heard? How long have you been a fan? That whole thing.
Okay, so I ironically got into it, like, right around the Napster era.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of like, who are these Metallica guys? Why are they so important? And then a friend of mine was just starting to get into them and get into guitar and stuff like that. So that's right around the time, a little late in life. Like I was kind of in my late teens
mm-hmm.
when I really started getting into music. So I was a little bit, you know, behind. And my first show was actually May 7th, 2004 at the same arena in Saskatoon.
Was that the Madly in Anger with the World Tour?
It was, yeah.
So that's interesting. So I'm guessing you had maybe heard of Inner Sandman or something. Maybe you were aware of the name, but you just didn't know much about the music.
Yeah, well, like, being from small town Western Canada at the time, you know, you're pretty limited with what radio was going to give you. And it was, you know, there weren't really rock stations available in my area because it was so rural.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, around that time, you know, the internet's coming around and, you know, there's MTV and stuff like that. People are starting to get cable. You know, I grew up with two channels,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is pretty sad, you know, being that I'm not that old. But yeah.
So let me ask you this. How old are you, first of all?
I am 33.
Okay. You're 2 years younger than me. Wow. So
yeah.
What were you listening to? I'm just curious as like, so you were, you know, in 2000, you were probably 15, right?
Yeah.
So what were you listening to?
Yeah. I was just starting to get into the Red Hot Chili Peppers around the same time. They had the big album.
Californication.
For them with Californication at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting into them, but I think it really all started. I was showing the Black album around that time. You know, most people I knew were kind of into the new, you know, getting into the new metal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. And then I got showing Metallica, and I just kind of thought that was so much better. It really knocked me out at the time.
Yeah, right on. Well, yeah, especially if you were just sort of dipping your toes in, like, what was happening then, like Korn or Limp Bizkit, to hear Metallica.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to disrespect those bands, but I think Metallica's a lot better, so I can see. What did you think about Saint Anger when it came out?
I mean, by the time that came out, I really dove into them hard. Like by the time Saint Anger was out, I was into everything. So I got into that record pretty deep as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think The Unnamed Feeling, I think, is one of my favorites to this day, actually. I mean, you know, mastering wise and stuff. I mean, there's some interesting choices were made. I mean, they were obviously trying to make it sound as ugly as they could.
Right.
So, you know, that's a decision that you can, you know, it is what it is.
So how did you like the Madly in Anger with the World Tour? I mean, most people, by most accounts, that was a pretty awesome tour.
Yeah, they mixed it up pretty good. Like, I remember they played, was it No Leaf Clover? Or was it, yeah, it was No Leaf Clover with the orchestra through the speakers.
Oh, wow, weird. Like on a track?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, yeah. And then they played The Wait.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember that. So it was, yeah, it was, they were mixing it up pretty good. It was awesome.
What would you say, like, it's sort of a tough question for some folks, but what would you say your favorite Metallica record is?
Oh, I guess if I could only keep one, I'd have to keep Ride the Lightning, I think.
Yeah, that's mine,
but
too.
But it is a tough question for sure, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of changes for me just depending on what's going on in my life, you know? Like the anniversary of Death Magnetic, I've been listening to that a lot. And I mean, that's the one I want to listen to the most right now, but that changes all the time. And that's pretty normal, I suppose.
I would have liked to have seen more of it on the tour, actually.
Well, did you see the World Magnetic Tour?
Yes, in Calgary, yeah.
Okay, cool. So how many shows have you seen?
Oh, okay, so if I go back, I did Saskatoon, Winnipeg just before that, then Edmonton last summer. Before that, I saw them in Edmonton as well when they did they did two shows before they recorded at Vancouver with the Through the Never film.
Right, you were at one of those shows, right?
I was at one of those shows. That was wild. Wow. Before that, Bonnaroo down in Tennessee there.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of my home. That's near me.
Yeah. Actually, that Calgary one would have been in between there. Yeah. Bonnaroo was before Death Magnetic was out. Then before that, I think I got to go all the way back to Saskatoon, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm probably missing a couple. But
how far are you from Saskatoon in Edmonton?
I live right downtown Saskatoon now, but work has me just kind of all over the place. I'm in Williston, North Dakota right now.
Oh, wow. Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Through the Never film. You're the first person I've talked to that was there for that. So what was that like? I mean, they obviously told everyone they'd be making a film, and there were maybe different kinds of cameras all around and cranes and such. Did they do any songs twice? Did they stop in between and address the crowd? Was it like a real show? Like for someone who wasn't there, maybe tell us what that was like.
Yeah, it was basically the two shows they did in Edmonton. I believe it was two.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically just a normal show. Like there were cameras around, and I think they were just trying to, you know, build up an inventory of footage.
Right.
And basically testing everything. Like before that, they had that rig down in Mexico City, I think, for like several nights, just making sure everything's good.
Wow.
And as far as the like doing songs twice and that sort of thing, that didn't happen until it was actually in Vancouver, I don't think.
That's funny. They're like, let's try to find the furthest place away to test the gear.
And
then we'll bring it all the way up here.
Yeah.
Wow, cool.
And Calgary has an issue because they've got that saddle dome and the roof isn't able to hoist a lot of the equipment and stuff. So typically Edmonton gets the better end of the Metallica shows lately.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize what goes into advancing a tour like that. It's the minutiae of stuff that you just mentioned. For example, for this tour, the cubes weigh a certain amount. There are a certain amount of the cubes. And they have to, the ceiling of whatever venue has to be able to support those cubes. Otherwise, they have to find another venue or find another city. Because I don't think they're at a point where they're going to sacrifice the cubes to do a show, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fascinating. So what was it like seeing the Doris come down and all the theatrics of the Through the Never stuff?
Oh, it was awesome. And you could see that there was like some acting going on. Like James was kind of yelling at his crew and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like instructing them to do things and stuff like that, which isn't James, but so it's kind of an interesting angle to take. But yeah, it was, you know, and like sitting there before the show started, all of a sudden like an amp would catch on fire or something like that.
Right.
And you're like, is that supposed to happen? And you know, it was just weird. Or like a microphone or something would get all screwed.
You know what scares me about that is like the Cry Wolf scenario of it. Like, you know, like for my friends who were able to see the Cunning Stunts type touring, where you kind of knew some shit was going to go wrong and a guy's going to catch on fire. But like, what if something really did go wrong?
Right.
And
yeah.
You just think it's part of the show, you know, and you're in danger.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, let's get to the Edmonton show real quick. So last year, of course, that was in the stadium. That was, the Commonwealth Stadium. Is that correct?
Commonwealth, yeah.
And this was August of last year. And you got to see Memory Remains, Lights, and Blackened. How do you think personally compared now that you've been able to see the arena tour versus the stadium tour last year? What are your thoughts and pros and cons for each one?
Well, I mean, for that one, I probably have a little bit of an unfair vantage point because I was in the snake pit.
Mm, nice.
So, I mean, if you're up close and personal, I would almost take I mean, I kind of like outdoor for sound myself. I don't know if that's a myth or not. Just talking to Lars in Saskatoon, he said one of the issues playing in the round is the sound isn't all traveling in one direction. Argument made for the end stage where the sound's all traveling one way.
Right.
That is supposed to, you know, sound a little bit better or whatever. But
I think one of the only problems with outside is that depending on the weather, the sound has to travel through wind or through rain, or and that can affect it. But if it's right. a clear, pretty night, then, you know, I've heard Big Mick talk about that, I think.
Yeah, and I believe it was August 15th, so it's really hot up in Canada at that time.
So you had the Hardwired experience, which automatically gets you Snake Pit, right?
They actually had a little tent set up for us further back.
Okay.
And, you know, some stools, some place to leave your stuff, you know, just a really comfortable, I think they'd serve you drinks there. And of course, nobody was there. Everybody was in the Snake Pit. So they just, you had the choice. And it was the same thing in Saskatoon. You could sit real close in the lower bowl, or you could be on the floor if you wanted to.
You know, what really surprised, I was able to do the Snake Pit also last year in St. Louis. And what really surprised me was how it wasn't empty, but how unpacked the Snake Pit was right up until Metallica played.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those VIP people, they just kind of hang out in the lounge in the back and, you know, cause they've got the whole museum thing set up and stuff too. So there's a lot to take in over there.
Right.
In Saskatoon, I made sure I was out for Jim Brewer because I missed him in Winnipeg. He was going on pretty early. Like, I remember I was in the stadium at 7:30 sharp in Winnipeg, and he was just getting off. So I thought, well, I better go check out Jim, you know. So
in Winnipeg, you just did like a normal show.
Yeah, I was in the very back row of the upper deck.
Okay, cool.
So opposite experience. Yeah.
Well, let's go back to Edmonton just for a second, because I'm sure your interaction with the boys was a little different. So let's maybe cover them both. So what time do you get to the venue if you have a Hardwired experience? I know they line you up to go into, like, just walk us through what that's like. So you got there early, I guess.
Yeah. So for the, I'm not sure how it is for the Whiplash people and all them. I think they can show up quite early as well. In the lounge, you've got the Hardwired people, the Whiplash people, and I think, what is it? The Unforgiven package?
Yeah.
I think they might have access to the lounge as well. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But for the Hardwired people, they said be there in between 4 and 4:45. Or be, you know, make sure you're in there no later than 4:45.
Is part of that because they, and this is me just guessing, but is part of that because they want to give you time to take your lithograph back to the car? Or they want to let you have time to go back to your car or something? Is that part of it at all?
Yeah, they do. They do give you that option because some people, you know, they bring in guitars and stuff like that to get signed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that, and in Edmonton, it was kind of nice because they kind of, you know, you had some place to keep all that stuff. But if you didn't have a vehicle at Saskatoon, you know, you're kind of screwed. So
tell us about the Spit Out the Bone buffet. Were you able to partake in that?
Yeah, no, I didn't so much in Saskatoon here, but I definitely dove into it in Edmonton. It's pretty good. It's all right. Yeah. Caterers and lots of meat. And, you know, it's your standard catered event.
You may not know the answer to this, but I'm curious. I wonder if they use their own catering, like the same crew of people that cook for the band, or if they just hire kind of outside third party catering just for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like it's kind of, they're called CID that looks after the Hardwired experience.
Right.
Which they contract that out to. And I don't know if they do the whole rest of the thing like that, but I would imagine it would be the same because it looked similar and, you know, I think it would be logistically easier to
have
somebody looking after the whole thing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they have to rely on local catering or not.
Tell us about the Memory Remains Museum.
Pretty cool. Like they've got, I'm just thinking back to Edmonton here. They had like lots of memorabilia, like the platinum, record, what do you call them? Awards or certifications or whatever.
Right. Yep.
Stuff like that hung up and some drawers you can go through with lots of pictures in them and stuff like that. It's just kind of, Saskatoon, I noticed they had from the Through the Never movie, they had some of the wardrobes and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Remember in Garage Incorporated, there's that one photo where they're kind of like a soapbox band or whatever you call those.
Yeah, the Metallicats.
Yeah, the Metallicats. Yeah, they had one of those suits there and stuff like that. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's definitely worth checking out. Yeah. And a drum set.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you jam on any of the instruments?
I didn't. I got my photo on the drums in Edmonton. It was pretty cool. I'm not a musician myself, so, you know, right. I'm just kind of a musician, but.
So in Edmonton, this is your first time you're going to meet the boys, right? Have you this is your first time. So you must be, I imagine it to enjoy the buffet or the museum or really any of that stuff. When you've got the anticipation that you're going to meet them, was it hard to enjoy all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. It was the first, not the second time so much, but the first time it was a little nerve-wracking. You know, I made sure I had a few drinks and then. And it really amazed me, like, once we got in there to meet the guys, how nervous everybody got and how quiet it got. So I felt like, you know, like super sober, like really quickly all of a sudden. And it's kind of scary.
I mean, I bet. I'll tell this story very briefly, but I don't know if you know of this writer and author named Christopher Hitchens. He died a few years ago, but my wife got me some passes at one of his lectures to meet him. And she bought me the VIP thing where there was like an open bar before. And I drank so much because I was so nervous that I couldn't even speak to him. I was so drunk. So
oh, wow.
I had to just pass on it. But the thing is, I was in a room with like 60 people. It was kind of a big party. But the hardware stuff is just, what is it, just 10 people? It's limited, right?
A dozen, yeah.
And are you talking to these people or these people that you are friends with still or...
I'm not in contact with any of them. I kind of wish I was, but, it was really cool to hang out with some of the other fans for a bit and reminisce and stuff. It just really sets up the whole night for you. It's really good.
So tell us, so I guess it's at some point they have the hardware people line up somewhere and you all kind of show up and then they take you to a designated room and then do the boys come in one by one or are they all just in there? I really don't even know how it works.
Okay, so they kind of line up everybody around the edge of the building, the security, or the edge of the room, and then the security people come in.
Do they brief you or anything?
Yeah, they brief you on, you know, like what to do and what not to do, and, you know, like don't ask James to sign more than one thing and stuff like that, and yeah, don't take pictures. You're allowed to take pictures. So the CID guys, they go around the room and take a buttload of pictures, and then they just email them out to everybody after.
That's a pretty good way to do it, I think.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, the selfies and stuff, like, that would all just get in the way, you know, so.
Is it just James that has the one item, or do they all, is it one item per person, or how does it work?
I would say he has a pretty loose rule about one item. They just don't want you to get carried away, you know, and get him to sign, you know, 19 things, or your whole stack of albums or something like that.
But, what did you take to get signed, if anything?
So the first time I took, I had... For Kirk, I had the Too Much Horror Business book.
Nice.
And then I got them to sign Hardwired. I had a Hardwired vinyl.
Great.
I'm
sure they dug that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And for Robert, I had the Jacko DVD.
Hmm.
Signed that. And as well as the album, of course. James, just the album. And Lars, just the album.
It's got to be cool for them to... be the band that they are and have a guy like you who's been a fan since 2000. You've been a fan almost 20 years. And the one thing you really want to get signed is their new record. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, like I just kind of, you know, I find I have a lot in common with all them. Like I'm kind of interested in all the same things. So I kind of like, I try to talk to Kirk about horror stuff, you know, and then I talk to Robert a lot about Jacko and James about cars and, you know, with Lars, I seem to talk more about the band for some reason, but yeah.
Well, give us some little snapshots into the convo. I mean, we're all curious about who was the personable one. Any insight into talking to those dudes, I think all of us would be appreciative to hear about.
So they're all great guys, of course.
Boo. I wanted some dirt, dude.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, of course.
James, I would say, is the most difficult one to talk to.
Okay.
You know, he's a little bit more like me, you know, kind of the, maybe not a people person so much.
Okay.
Lars is like social butterfly. He's he's great. He's the, you know, he's, he can talk to an hour with any, you know, with anybody.
When you say, when you say you talked to him about the band, what were you guys talking about?
Like kind of like where I, well, basically in Edmonton, I basically spent half of it just begging them to play Saskatoon on the next leg or when they did the arena round. Yeah. Which happened, which is awesome. But he said he wasn't sure if they would be able to, he said Winnipeg would happen for sure. He wasn't positive about Saskatoon. And then he asked me a few questions about Saskatchewan, like what was the biggest city and stuff like that. They've been to Saskatoon numerous times, but it's kind of, in Canada, there's kind of like most of the population lives just north of the border, right?
Okay.
And along there, there's the Trans-Canada Highway. Edmonton and Saskatoon are kind of up north, kind of out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you know, logistically, Saskatoon tends to miss a lot of things, even though it's the biggest indoor arena in the province. And it's a really small market. Like, it's only 250,000 people with the, and I think they got over 16,000 into that arena the other night. So
it's interesting to think about how much of an effect you talking to him might have actually had on them playing that gig.
I sure hope so. I like to kind of fantasize that I'm the reason that they played Saskatoon, but I'm not so sure about that one.
Well, I think they're all pretty good in general with, like, dipping in, maybe not James as much, with dipping in with social media. On any given Lars Instagram post, you're going to have a million fucking people saying, come play wherever. But I got I got to believe that a dude that would have the Hardwired experience, I mean, those are truly diehards, and I'm sure that they pay attention to that stuff more than we think. I mean, I know there are a lot of people who take those opportunities to ask them to play Fixer or whatever. So we'll see. We'll see about that. So what did you, did you talk to Kirk about horror stuff? I mean, you brought the book. Are you a big horror nerd yourself?
So back in Edmonton, I remember talking to him about his kind of the exhibit he was doing for his horror collection. At that time, they were getting set up in Salem, I think. And then I was asking him to be bringing it north of the border. Now he's got it in Toronto, I believe. So I'd love to, if I get the opportunity, to go check it out. And he makes appearances at those things as well, and, and it's scheduled and announced and everything, so it's not like he just shows up randomly and stuff. Yeah, and then Robert, basically mostly about Jacko. I was talking to him a little bit about Canadian football, actually. He used to be like a defensive back or something in high school, stuff like that, so that was interesting. And James, like, the reason I did this twice is because the first time, James was the first one to talk to me, and I was getting pretty nervous, and it was kind of super awkward. And I just remember thinking, I can't leave it like that. I got to do that one more time. And I had a really nice talk with him in Saskatoon. So I'm just so much for the experience. You know, it was really good.
Well, so moving on from there a little bit. So some of the stuff I've seen people say is that it just sort of happens really fast. So do you guys do a group photo or something? Is there a thing at the end that kind of wraps it up?
Okay, so first thing, you get in there, you line up, and you get to go up and take one group photo with the band in front of a Metallica banner. And then as they're, after that's all done, they line you up around the edge of the room, and then you talk to them individually each for 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. And then they just kind of take photos as that is all happening and stuff, so.
I mean, it does sound awkward. I mean, there's probably no way around that.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be. And it's such a one-sided experience for the fan, you know, too, because it's such a big moment in your life. And then, you know, for the band, they meet, you know, millions of people all the time. It's like, oh, yeah, got to meet some more crazy fans again. And but they seemed, you know, really happy and grateful to be there and all that sort of thing. So.
How long after you guys were done meeting the band did they go on? Is it pretty quick?
It's not super quick.
There's time for you to get to the snake pit and all that.
Yeah. Like, I went back up to the lounge, had a couple beers, went back down, saw Jim Brewer for a bit. And yeah, there's lots of time. Yeah.
So what do you, what's your biggest takeaway from that show before we move on to the Saskatoon show? I know you just mentioned Jim Brewer, but just to wrap up Edmonton.
Yeah. It's not a terribly big city. It's less than 1 million people, and it's, you know, that arena could hold up to 65 if they played in the round, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, you know, big, huge arena, small city, and you know, it was, they had 45 there, and I remember looking it up just on the local media. I just went back and checked an old article. Beyonce was there about, you know, 5-6 months prior, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just amazed me, like, how big they are, because they, according to the article's numbers anyway, they drew about 5,000 more than Beyonce.
Wow.
Which is, like, tough to believe, you know, like, because she's such a staple in pop culture and everything, and it's just amazing the staying power that some of these old rock bands have, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she does the stadium here in Nashville. She just played the stadium recently, and I didn't go, but they said it was packed.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to the show this week in Saskatoon, you got the Hardwired Experience again, and you're going into it probably a little more confidently, because you know it is, like, you know what's coming, so it's easier to prepare yourself.
For sure, yeah.
So did you spend more time in the museum or in the lounge? Were you just taking it a little easier, or what was your vibe like this time?
Well, I got a little screwed up getting in there, because they kept sending me to, like, the wrong entrance. Like, I was there, like, right at 4 o'clock or whatever, and it was probably 4:45 by the time I got to where I was supposed to be, and they were actually, CID guys actually left a voicemail and stuff like that, and they gave me a whiplash pass when I walked in. So I got up the lounge, and I'm like, whiplash, whoa. I went back down, and then they got me my Hardwired thing, and that was all straightened out, so I kind of zipped through it a little bit, unfortunately, but I did go back after Jim Brewer left the stage just for a few minutes to go and check it out. And it was a little, like, a smaller room than Saskatoon. They didn't have quite as extensive of a setup, but it's, you know, it's still really cool to check it out and have a look at everything. Sure.
Were there any notable differences? Like, it's been a year since you've done the CID Hardwired Experience. Was it better?
Yeah.
Was it more, other than the hiccup with getting the wrong thing? I mean, was there anything more tight about it, or was it mostly the same?
Yeah, they had a little bit more of a process. I actually recognized some of the same employees at both, and they used to use, like, more people, but they were saying, like, they've got it down to kind of a science now. So it was just the one guy would take us down this time. And
from what I can tell, I don't know much about it, but I think, you know, they have to obviously partner with, like, local people to help them run that. And I've read that some people have had some brush-ups with that. Like, they went to the wrong line, like you said, or got the wrong wristband.
Yeah.
I know for me, I had Snake Pit because a friend of mine offered them to me. And he had, I believe, the Whiplash Experience. So he went early, like you did. I went to a nearby bar. And I went in when the doors opened, and I was just trying to get to the Snake Pit, all right? I wasn't trying to weasel my way into the VIP stuff, but I sort of just found my way. I just sort of easily walked right into all that shit. And it just seemed like to me like they had local people helping with the CID, and the local people didn't really know what was going on, because I just showed them my Snake Pit pass, and they just let me through all the doors, you know?
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was definitely a local thing. Like, they had, I think the fact that there's so many different VIP packages had them all kind of screwed up, right? Because on the main entrance where everybody comes in, that's where they had the Unforgiven and the whatever the lesser packages were. And then the Whiplash and the Hardwired were together, and they kept scooting me over to the Unforgiven side, which wasn't where I was supposed to be. So, yeah, it was nothing to do with CID. They did a great job. It all worked out.
Totally. And anyone who's interested in this, who knows, I mean, in the States, it's $2,500 for the Hardwired Experience. So,
okay.
You know, I think when you're paying that much money for this VIP and they're putting you in the wrong line, it does warrant being frustrated. Like, you've paid a lot of money to have a certain experience and to have it. Like, I know one guy wrote into us, and because of James worked his way around the whole room, but somehow forgot to talk to him. And so he ended up working it out with CID. They actually got him a little private meeting with James. But, you know, I'm sure it was embarrassing to make a stink about it. But, dude, that's a lot of money for most people. So,
yeah, for sure. And it didn't seem like a bunch of, like, just, like, really rich people. You know, it seemed like you know, people that kind of scratched all the money out of their pockets, you know, in the bottom of their drawers and stuff like that to get in there. Like, it was hardcore people there.
Most of the people I've met who either do that or who travel to see the band, they really do sacrifice to do it. I think is pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's better than the other way around. That's for sure. Yeah.
So you're a year wiser. You're one hardwired experience wiser, and you're going into it this time. What do you say to the boys? Did they recognize you? What was different about the experience? Walk us through that a little bit.
Well, I was kind of thinking about it for a while, and I thought it would be really genuine if I didn't bring anything to sign. And I just came in there and I said, and I actually kind of confused the guys a little bit each time I talked to them. And I was like, I'm just here to say hi. You guys signed, you know, everything I have last time. So
they're like, wait, you just want to talk to us?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I kind of.
That's a good move.
I thought so anyway, but, and I think they appreciated that, I hope. And
so what'd you talk about this time?
So this time I talked to James last this time, which was pretty cool icing on the cake, considering I talked to him the most awkwardly in the first time back in Edmonton.
Yeah, you had a nice little redemption there. That's good.
Yeah, the redemption for sure. Yeah. And who did I talk to first? I think I talked to Lars first, if I remember. No, I think it was Robert, actually.
Okay.
So I just kind of dove into asking him, you know, kind of dumb questions about Jacko, because I'm not a musician and some of that stuff's just over my head or whatever. And I was talking to him about fretless playing and stuff like that. And I asked him kind of a dumb question, like if he had ever put anything fretless to tape with Suicidal or whatever. And he's like, and from what I understood, he was like, yeah, I did quite a lot of six string fretless with Suicidal.
Interesting. I wouldn't have known that.
If I remember correctly. And got to Lars and kind of just chit-chat about the band and stuff like that. Kirk, I talked to. I was asking him if there was any modern horror he was really digging and stuff. And
great
we talked
question.
About the movie It.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit, and the books and stuff and the new one coming out and all that. So that was really cool. Oh, actually, I got to mention this. At Bonnaroo, after Metallica played on the other stage, My Morning Jacket played till like 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk came out and played One Big Holiday with them.
Oh, wow.
That was way back in 2008, and it was really awesome. So I talked to him about My Morning Jacket for a bit, which was really cool.
I'm guessing you're a fan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I love, I'm not going to pretend to be a huge fan, but I love that Z record. There's a song on there called Dodonte. It's the last song on the record.
Right. Yeah.
Which is just, it's an 8-minute jaunt. I recommend that song to anyone. And I got,
oh, yeah.
I got Circuital. Is that how you say that one?
Yeah. I always kind of say Circultural, but I don't know. Circuital. That's probably more accurate. Yeah.
And then another record I know every second of this record. I really fell in love with it. Is his first solo record.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't dove into to Jim James's solo stuff just yet. Not so much anyway. But yeah, I definitely would like to do that in the future. At the time, I believe it was Evil Urges they were promoting at Bonnaroo.
Okay.
And that's a great record as well. Yeah.
They're a really cool band.
Yeah. Like one of the things I was talking to Kirk about is like they kind of seemed a little scared to release a straight up rock record or not interested, you know, which he was, you know, slightly disappointed by or whatever. But he loves that band and I do as well. And that was really cool. Because I remember at that festival running into a lot of Metallica people that were like, you know, I'm just here for Metallica, screw all these other bands. And if you get a chance, look at that festival lineup. I don't think I've seen anything, you know, that awesome before or since, and it's 4 days. It's really mind-blowing if you look at that lineup and you see who was all there. So I thought, you know, kind of Kirk coming out with another band was kind of, you know, a little... You know, not really a middle finger to all those people, but it was kind of, you know, something to brag about when you see the Metallica people around the next day or whatever, right?
I'm pulling up the 2008 lineup right now. Oh, Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam, Metallica, Jack Johnson, Kanye. Shit, that's pretty dope.
Yeah.
Robert Plant, Alison Krauss, Phil Lesh and Friends, My Morning Jacket was a headliner. Allman Brothers, Rockin' Tours, Willie Nelson, Death Cab. I mean, this looks awesome.
Yeah, Zappa plays Zappa, and I think Sigur Rós was there.
Wow.
Yeah, like, it's really deep. And the big rumor was that Led Zeppelin was going to play. And then it ended up being Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, which is cool, too. But
Yeah, I mean, that Robert Plant, Alison Krauss project, that Raising Sand record, which was made here in Nashville, is just so phenomenal. I'm pretty sure it won a couple of Grammys. And dude, yeah, that plays Zappa, that Dweezil, I mean, I think Dweezil in some ways is a better guitar player than Frank. He's a little less wily, a little less raw, but
right.
That's an amazing project too. I'm seeing Minus the Bear, that's amazing. Jacob Dylan's great.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you work your way to James. Now this is the big redemption moment, right? So tell me about that.
I just keep it light. I try not to, keep it weird, or to make it a little weird for him or anything, or to, So I just kind of had a really nice talk to him about cars and stuff like that. I had got an old Toyota I'm restoring, and I was asking him if he's got anything on the go. I talked a little about the sound at the venues, and it was kept it light, but it was really cool and it was really pleasant. And actually, one of these other guys asked me if he could have my signature. So this guy came up and was like, can you get James to sign my back?
Wow.
That was kind of funny. So he did that at the end and, shook my hand, and that was that. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. So what would be your advice for anyone who is considering getting one of these? I mean, you've been touching on it this whole time, but if you were to tell someone as an experienced, hardwired experiencer.
Oh, yeah. I think you got to go all the way. Like, if you're going to pay that much for Whiplash, I think you got to go all the way and get the hardwired experience, to me. Because it's definitely a great experience meeting them, that's for sure. It's just the icing on the cake for me. It was really good. And then the show was awesome, of course, too. One thing I'll say is Kirk won't sign anybody's skin. I witnessed in that one. He's got like a phobia about like touching people and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny. So this guy ended up with, signatures of three of the members on his back. he was getting a full tattoo of the Master of Puppets cover work. These people are crazy, man.
I'm sure that's got to weird them out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's flattering. It's cool. That's definitely someone that obviously feels very connected to the band. But, hearing that Kirk is a little squeamish about it, at first you're like, oh, come on, Kirk. But when you really think about it, it's like, that's got to be strange for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I remember him saying in interviews that he's got like a phobia about fans touching him and stuff like that. So I'm sure that's all related.
Now, one of the things I'm most excited to talk to you about is you mentioned that at the Saskatoon show, you were able to try out this new technology where you were able to hear their monitor mixes. Is that what the deal is?
Yeah, so they hand out these iPod touches, and they've got it connected to Wi-Fi there, and you can switch back and forth between the band's monitors.
And they just gave it to the hardwired people, or who are the people getting to check it out? Okay, hardwired people.
Yeah, just the hardwired people, yeah. And it might become a thing, I don't know, but...
Well, it's so funny that you and I got connected today to talk about that. My friend Dan Cantor, him and I are both big Dave Matthews Band fans, and we were discussing some of that, and he mentioned he was able to hear the bass player's monitor mix, and I think the drummers too. I'd never heard of that this was an option for people. As a dude who plays a lot myself, I know that my mix is real weird. If you were able to hear my mix, it might sound real weird to a fan. So let's camp out in like what these mixes were like. I'm very, very curious.
Okay, so just from memory here, but I think Lars was mainly listening to the bass and his own instrument, of course.
Not a lot of James. Was there a lot of James vocal or James guitar?
I think there might have been a bit of rhythm guitar in there too, but I've definitely had a few beers at that point, so I'm just trying to piece it together. But Robert, I think, was mainly listening to rhythm guitar and drums.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
And Kirk, of course, rhythm guitar would be loud. Rhythm guitar and drums. James, his own vocals and drums, I think, if I remember right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. How did James's vocals sound? Were they pretty loud?
They were good. Yeah, it was really good. And then like listening to, just through the earbuds or whatever, it's a little more, you can hear it a little more clearly, I guess. I think just because it's so loud in the stadium that you get kind of a distorted, So it was, it's definitely interesting. Like, I don't know if I would do that like all the time, but it's worth checking out. And I tried it with one earbud in, you know, two earbuds in, and, you know, flipped around. And then there's one where you can listen to the whole band as well.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those of you who may not know out there, so they listen with in-ear monitors, so they don't have any monitors on stage. And within those in-ear monitors, they can put in whatever they want, and you can even get really in-depth with, you know, if James wanted to, he could pan Kirk to his left ear, put the bass in his right ear, whatever he wants. So my initial thought when hearing that you were able to do that, Tyler, was that it'd be cool just to dip in on and check it out. But that, I don't think that'd be the way I'd want to hear the show, because what you're going to hear is probably lower volume, because the whole point of in-ears is to hear it better at a lower volume, save your ears. And for me, it would just be more of a point of fascination. Like, what do they need to get through a show?
Yeah, you know exactly. I mean? Yeah, it was for interest sake. It was cool to check out. But yeah, like if that becomes like a big thing in the future, I don't know. Like to me, it kind of seems like it would end up kind of being like a little bit of a gimmick, you know, like,
right,
you know, like 3D movies or something. Like it's cool the first time you see it, but then it's kind of like, ah, whatever.
That's true. And, you know, I don't.
Today's technology and everybody having cell phones and stuff, like I'm sure they want to utilize that. You know, you could come in with a really awesome set of headphones and, you know, like.
That's true. And they're a very technology forward band.
Yeah. And it might be like some of the audiophiles might really like that. I don't know.
It does seem like a weird way to experience a show. Like, I don't know if I would want my fans. It seems like it'd be almost distracting in a way, but
yeah.
To each his own. I totally get it. I mean, we got to figure out. I mean, phones aren't going away, so I'm sure everyone's trying to figure out a way to move forward and still maintain like an interactive experience, even though people are connected to their phones. So,
yeah, and I imagine they did something similar to that effect in Antarctica when they did that show down there.
That's right, the Freeze 'Em All gig. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, dude, thank you so much for taking the time to share this stuff. I mean, I find all that really fascinating. Do you have any plans to see more of this tour, or is that it for you for this year?
I think that's probably it for me. Like, I'm getting to a really busy time with my work, unfortunately. And I think that was the last show of this leg, if I'm right, and I don't know where they pick up again.
It was the last show of the leg. They pick up, they're doing 2 weeks in Austin for the Austin City Limits.
Oh, that'd be great.
And that's not really even part of their run. Their next proper gig is on the 16th of October in Milwaukee.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'd say two shows plus a Hardwired experience would be a pretty good little tour souvenir for you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and just you know, mixing it up, experiencing it both ways. You know, at my age, I was kind of thinking, oh, I'm kind of all right not being in the front row, you know, in Winnipeg and stuff. And I was right in the back, and then I partway through the show, I'm like, no, this just isn't as good. You know?
Right.
So then I was happy to be up front again in the next show or whatever. So
that's cool, man. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time. I know we all benefited from it, and we'll try to cross paths down the line.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the opportunity and really enjoying the show. I just got into it recently, actually, but yeah, I'm really hitting it pretty hard with all these long drives and stuff. So
awesome,
really
dude.
Enjoy it.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Yeah, you betcha. Thanks a lot.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.